The following podcast may contain discussions supported by science that may be considered dangerous to some listeners and conspiracy theorists. Discretion is advised.
The Three Down Greencast is brought to you by Lucky Bastard Distillers, Saskatchewan's premier distillery, and by the Pilot Bowens Brewing Company, brewed in the heart of Regina. Welcome to the Three Down Greencast. You are listening to the internet's only I don't even know what to say at this point. Podcast. I am Joel Gasson with John Fraser, as usual, as the Riders, now winless in 7 games.
Ooh.
After a loss to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers in the Banjo Bowl. A game that was, for once, at least close. So there's that. Which is something to talk about, because that is often hasn't been the case for many teams in this series. So we'll get into that. We will get into yet another hit from Miles Brown. And whether that even should have been penalized or not, the reaction by one TSN's Glenn Suter to that hit, and more. Before that, though, you may remember a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about a great fundraiser hitting around Regina for Bright Eyes Dog Rescue. Basically, fans are getting bombed, which means there's a Bomber fan, your number one Bomber fan sign planted on your lawn. Someone paid $20 to the rescue to get it there. You can spend $20 to get it off in fewer than 24 hours if you do so, please. Seems to have done well at Regina. Some people I actually, you know, acquaintances, the people, you know, used to work with or used to know a little bit better, but don't so much anymore. I've seen some posts on social media of them getting that sign on their lawn. So that's great to see.
Yes.
But John, because I don't believe the Bright Eyes Dog Rescue operates in Saskatoon, did get something happen to him with his own version of, I guess, being bombed. Are we going to call it Zacked? I don't know what we're going to call this.
Let's call it being Zacked. First off, Grandpa Ted, one of our 7 listeners, thank you. I always love running into you. I was going to call you, but I just haven't had time this week. So I didn't watch the game live. I had actually volunteered to do some MC duties at the Broadway Street Fair, had a new event called Culture Shock, had some great dance. I was doing Hungarian dance in plus 33 temperatures, and my Apple Watch actually told me I was having a heart attack.
I mean, that's fair, because, I mean, here we are on September 9th, and it was still fucking 34 degrees today.
Oh, it was ridiculous.
Come on.
Oh, it was humid and everything. So. Yeah. I managed to, you know, follow along. This isn't one of those. I'm like, there's too many people I know. This isn't one of the games that I can PVR and watch later and not spoil, right? So by the end of it, the fourth quarter, I'm literally MCing, and I've got like, they hooked me up with like a Britney Spears microphone, so I didn't need a mic in hand. And I'm holding my clipboard, announcing the dancers as they're coming on while I have the game streaming. So that was my setup for Banjo Bowl. So I didn't really get to watch it. So I come home that afternoon after overheating, looking forward to an ice bath. And I pull up and I see the sign on my lawn. I'm like, an election hasn't been declared yet. Who's put a sign on my lawn? And Grandpa Ted in front of my house. Because Grandpa Ted, he is one of my son's best friends, Grandpa, right? He listened to this podcast before we realized that. So kind of cool, small world. So as we come up to the house, I burst out laughing. I'm in agony from dancing. I'm sweaty. I'm a disaster. And like, I didn't think there was anything that was going to, all I'm thinking is ice bath and a cold beer. And I pull my Tacoma up in front of my house. And
where'd
there
you
it
buy that
is,
Tacoma? Heart...
And it's Toyota.
Yeah, you haven't mentioned them in a while.
That's fair, actually. Then I'll just triple up the references here tonight. So as I pull up my beautiful Toyota Tacoma purchased from Enz Toyota, I see a sign, and this sign says, number one Zach Kolaris fan, with hearts all around it. And I bust out laughing. I'm like, I cannot, but I immediately stop what I'm doing. First thing I did was sent you a picture. And yes. I'm like, I that is fantastic. There was one little part on there, like, I'm good with that. But in brackets, Grandpa Ted had put Sergio sucks, and ooh, that I find ooh offensive.
Them's fighting words.
Them's our fighting
them's
words,
fighting
Grandpa
words.
Ted. You know what? I will admit with his recent resurgence that I'm not as hard on Zach Kolaris as I am. I still think he's terrifically overpaid, but...
No, we always knew we had some ability in him still. Like, he's not throw for 80 yards and throw 4 picks every game bad.
Right.
He's not Chad Kelly.
Trash... No, exactly. And let's not even compare him to Chad Kelly here, all right? No, Zach Collaros is occasionally not
Logan
great
Bonner.
At football.
He's not Logan Bonner.
Thank you. Better? There we go. Or even Jake Mayer, all right? Let's go with all the Calgary quarterbacks. But
really get that thing good for a couple weeks from now.
I laugh so hard. Like, there are times, you know, I've said that this podcast has let us do some cool shit. And one of those was meeting Sergio. Mm-hmm. And number two in terms of podcast stuff, even passing the Stadnet golf tournament, is Grandpa Ted tossing that sign up from a line that we said in the pod. That was so cool.
Yeah. Especially because, when you first sent it, I believe you sent it to the chat with myself and Greg McCullough from Piffles as well.
I did, yeah.
So I kind of thought maybe Greg had orchestrated this thing, but I didn't really say anything. But now that I actually got the full story, yeah, it's even better for sure.
Oh, 100%.
That it wasn't like a direct link between, like, you and someone that we all like know very closely kind of thing.
No, it's Grandpa Ted who, like I said, he's been like a listener since day one of the seven, if you will. And, it was cool. And I was probably in a much better mood because of the game result. Although in fairness, seeing that on my lawn and it not being, and to Grandpa Ted's credit, not just saying, oh, you know, number one Riders fan or, you know, Bombers suck, to say number one Zach Collaros fan, knowing how I feel about that guy's quarterback ability, like, wiser hood clap, tip one back for yourself, Grandpa Ted. Your grandson did say I need to hold on to the sign, though. Mm. So it is still out front. Lacey did turn it around to the backside with a Christmas advertisement is on there. But come on by, Grandpa Ted. It's waiting here for you if you need it back. And if not, it is going up in the man cave.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I laughed when you sent that to us. Like, it, the only thing would have been if, like, it was made of Subway lettuce or something.
Like, or if there was
like a bag of lettuce on your lawn that says Zach Collaros number one fan.
Could you imagine that? Just a bag of rancid Subway lettuce that sat out. It's like, because from what Lacey
said, God, if it was 35 degrees out, that stuff would have been like compost already.
Oh, 100%. Oh, it would have been just, oh, hi, Maya. Hi, are you coming to podcast here? Do you want to say, hey, can you look in the microphone and say, go Bombers? Okay,
no.
You go back upstairs with Mom or your brother, okay? Go get Max, get your popsicle. Oh, you're getting chips? Okay.
Hmm. I think we've officially been interrupted on the show by all three of your children at one point or another, so.
No, Connor is still off the hook.
He hasn't, huh?
No, Connor hasn't.
He's always been too old, I don't know.
He's the most chill. He's the most unlike me of the three of them. So that explains it. But yeah, a bag of Subway lettuce left outside at 33 degrees in humidity. And like that, I would have barfed. I would have barfed. Instead, I laugh because of Grandpa Ted. Now the thing that worries me, though, is we're giving Grandpa Ted ideas for next year or any potential playoff meeting. At least when the playoffs come, it'll be frozen. And the Riders will be on the outside looking in. Boom! I went there!
I mean, probably. At this point.
Oh, yeah.
At this point, it's it's not impossible. They certainly are still technically in the driver's seat to finish third in the West. Yes. But as we talked about last week, if we're going to go off vibes...
Ooh, they are not good.
It's pretty hard to top Edmonton's vibes right now. But we will get into that and a whole lot more. But John, for the Pile of Bones Brewing Company this week, what is in the glass?
As I walked into Sobey's Liquor today, mm-hmm. on my way home from work, I'm like, you know what? Feeling nostalgic. Like, I'm feeling like the Blue Bombers are good again. So I want to go with a throwback. I'm going with my introduction to IPAs and ones I really like. Pick myself up a Fat Tug 4-pack from Driftwood Brewery out of BC. Finally priced right. That used to be like $30 for a 4-pack. It's now down to 18. So the frugal man in me also enjoys the dollar to booze ratio, as it's a big hoppy 7%er. And after the day I had at Enns Toyota, not to do anything with Enns Toyota management or the fact that it's a great place to work, but the kind of day I had, I might drink three of them during this pod, Joel. Fair warning.
There is no qualms about it. The more you drink, the spicier you get, and the more ridiculous things you tend to say, which end up coming back to you in some form or another, like a sign on your lawn. So
that's fair. That means maybe I should rather do a double fist. We'll get real spicy on this one. But there's something about the fat tug. And anybody that's gotten a little buzzed or a little drunk off of it can vouch. It's a different drunk. I don't know what it is. Logistically, it doesn't make any sense. Scientifically, it makes even less sense. But it's like more of a mellow, chill kind of vibe. Like, where I won't get ranty, I'll just get braggy about the fact that the Bombers just won both games.
Maybe. Either I mean, I like the fat tug. I just haven't had it in a very long time. For me, you kind of inspired me last week when you were talking about the Blackbridge IPA.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I have to get the exclamation point in there. Almost missed it.
essential.
Because you said you thought it tasted lighter. I maybe because I've had many of them over the last year and a bit still. To me, it still tastes the same as it always has.
Oh, okay. Okay. Must have just been the, as we like to discuss now on this podcast, the vibes, if you will. And yes, that was my second fat tug you just heard crack.
Phrasing.
Shocking. John, 27% beers 10 minutes into the podcast? What?
No. What was perhaps not shocking was the results of the Banjo Bowl.
Oh, boy.
Not so much that I didn't think the Riders had a chance to win that game coming in, because despite everything that has been going on the last number of weeks, the Bomber offense, while better than it has been at times this year, was not exactly clicking on all cylinders in that game. So it was certainly there, and the opportunity and how they were going to win that game was there, but they didn't. And it's just a weird... I mean, we'll get into the game itself in a second, but this whole series, the Labor Day Banjo Bowl back-to-back situation, you looked it up, you did the split. There's been however many...
I did math!
Yeah, however many these been now, there has been far more times that one team has swept the other in this back-to-back than there has been splits, which goes against sort of the logic that people like, the cliches people like throw out about football. It's like, oh, it's hard to beat your rival in back-to-back weeks, or anyone in back-to-back weeks, quite frankly. This series apparently suggests otherwise, because, yeah, it's happened more often than a split has happened.
Well, it's funny. The reason I bought Fat Tug was, oh, I'm feeling nostalgic. Like, the last time Winnipeg won, swept the series. Like, I don't know why this has just escaped my mind so many times. But after the sweep now, Winnipeg has swept the Labor Day Classic Banjo Bowl series 5 times. The Riders 7 times. So there's been 20 of these games. The first Banjo Bowl was in 2004.
Yeah.
So, sorry, not even worse, 19 of these because of the COVID year.
Yeah.
So in 19 of these games, a split has only happened 7 times. That's ridiculous to me.
Just over half the time it sweeps.
Right. Like, so you have 19 times, 12 of them are sweeps. So it's funny that it's like one of those things, like when you and I started pointing out to people that Zach's numbers in the playoffs weren't great and people kind of stopped and went, huh. I feel like this is another one of those moments that you just assume.
Well, because
that...
it was kind of funny. Like, for Three Down Nation on the week, I think 7 out of the 10 of us doing picks picked the Riders. I was not one of them. I picked the Bombers because I was like, even though I kind of felt in my gut that the Riders could maybe win that game and they were due for a Banjo Bowl win, because we had talked about the fact that they hadn't won a Banjo Bowl since 2018. So at
or
some
game
point,
after Labor Day in 3 years.
After, like, at some point or another, they're going to win one of these games. But my head said, no, it's not going to be this one. And it wasn't. No. But it's just funny because, like, and I thought to myself, I was like, I mean, this series, and, like, I hadn't actually looked at the numbers, but anecdotally and just sort of thinking about it, I was like, this series does seem to sweep a lot. And I wasn't really too concerned about that. And, I mean, it is probably technically true that it is hard to sweep opponents in back-to-back weeks, but I don't think it's really as hard as people think it is, especially when historically in this series, as we talked about last week, one of these teams usually sucks.
Yeah.
So maybe it shouldn't be that surprising that that's the number, considering these teams have kind of gone back and forth in this series in terms of who sucked. So this was the first time in a long time both teams were mid to okay.
Right.
To good. Whatever range you want to put these teams in is kind of where they're close enough where anything could have in theory happened in either game. And so the Riders did lose again, as I think a number of us figured they would.
Yes.
And it's just such a baffling 7-game stretch, because I think, number one, it should have ended in Ottawa because the Command Center is completely overreached. But
yeah. Oh God, yeah.
And all of that
to the point that the command center came out later and said, "Hey, we're going to stop overreaching."
To the point where, yeah, the next week they completely reined it in, and I don't think they've overturned like one penalty since.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't think they've buzzed down for anything besides like spotting the ball, or, you know, was it offside or procedure or that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like they got their hand slapped and logic finally prevailed, and anybody that's associated with the command center this year should absolutely not have jobs next year. I'm sorry, any fan twos. I'm sorry, everybody in there. Anybody that's making the calls that started this year with the debacle that the league had to come out and basically neuter your department, none of you should have jobs next year.
Yeah, and I mean, in fairness, the command center has been fine since. I've had no issues with the way they've operated. It's how they've always should have been operating.
Yes.
It got out of control, so be it. So, I mean, that aside, the winless streak should have ended there. You take out the game against Edmonton where they got slapped.
Yes.
They've been in every football game. Even despite the fact that they were down bad to the Bombers at one point in Labor Day Classic, they clawed their way back into it. They had a chance to win six of these games, one of them they should have won. So, and there isn't, like, in the past, like, there was the start of the Chris Jones era where you all famously, all seven of you, remember, we'd sit here and talk about for weeks on end about how great the defense was, but could they count on the offense to step up on a game where the defense shit the bed? We talked about that ad nauseum for weeks.
Oh, yeah.
And it never happened. No. You know, then it kind of flipped the other way for a while. The defense kind of fell apart because the offense sucked for a while and the defense sucked at times, you know, under Chris Jones going forward and then Craig Dickinson. Like, there was always a very clear cut. Week after week, this is the issue. I can't pinpoint anything that I can say, this team sucks because of this. They just seem to, like, something, they suck because it just seems something seems to go wrong in every single game, and it's kind of floating around in different spots as to where the suck is going to land, and you just don't know where it will.
And it's funny, the suck seems to land in, like, one or two plays, one or two decisions.
Like, the most innocuous things sometimes, like, the Banjo Bowl turned on just a punt that was missed.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't necessarily a, like, games have turned on bad, cowardly punt decisions. Las Vegas Raiders. But we've seen that happen many, many times before. But, okay, what on a 3rd and 10, I believe it was, you know, punting or a 55-yard field goal, either way, I'm not really that upset over the decision. Especially Brett Lowther's not exactly automatic over 50, even with the wind at his back. I understand the punt decision, especially because, yeah, Corey Mace was right. The drive before that, they did pin the Bombers deep.
Yes.
And so you had the opportunity to then do it again and ratchet up the pressure on them even more, except the punt took a bad bounce towards the end zone and went all the way out. And then that just seemed to lift the entire thing off the Bomber offense, where they were able to get that one drive they needed to win the game.
Well, and the way Winnipeg started out with a 10-0 start. Now,
that's a whole other thing, where, you know, this is where I argue this team is very obviously different than ones before it, where we've seen those sorts of things happen in the Banjo Bowl, and we're talking this week about a 62-4 win for Winnipeg.
Yeah, and there have been, like, I get it, the most recent Banjo Bowl, and they kept bringing that up on the broadcast when they got up to the hot start, was, of course, last year, but there's a big asterisk on that with the whole Subway lettuce situation. So here's a fun fact for you, Joel, as you were making your great points there. The total loss margin, removing Edmonton, because we're going to remove Edmonton because Edmonton was just, they didn't play well. That is a game that we can say the defense sucked.
The defense sucked. The offense was kind of meh. Everything sucked, yeah.
Exactly. You remove the Edmonton game. Total points they've lost by is 13. 5 of those were in the Banjo Bowl on Saturday. That means heading into the Banjo Bowl, they had lost 4 games by 8 combined points.
Yeah, they lost the Labor Day Banjo Bowl series by 7 points.
Like, it's just, that's ridiculous to me. Like, I get it. They were winning close games to start the year, too, but...
And I know we've talked about this with Edmonton, too, and gave them a hard time for it. So this doesn't mean that I think the Riders are better than their record states. No. They are what their record is. They deserve the record they have. They've kind of gotten there in a weird way. And as we've talked about before, this is, you know, maybe a game or two short of where we thought they'd be. but it's about where we thought they'd be, third in the West, trending towards an 8-10, maybe 9-9 kind of season. I was a little on the optimistic side at 10-8. That's up likely very unrealistic now at this point.
Yes.
But, you know, it's just, it's weird, and it makes it very difficult to come onto a podcast where you're supposed to talk about a team when it's like, okay, like, there's just nothing specific you can point to and say they have to work on. Like, it all just feels kind of between the ears because there's just one or two small things a game generally that are happening that are holding them back from winning these games.
Well, and it's funny, the Edmonton comparison, unlike Edmonton, they don't have their best player sitting on the bench.
No.
Right? Like, it's not like
they
Trevor
don't
Harris
have an out-of-date, unwanted coach hanging around.
Exactly, right? The vibes around the team still, like, I feel like the pressure that this team is feeling is very external.
Yes.
And rightfully so, because this is almost like the Toronto Maple Leafs coming into a playoff game. You can't tell me that those guys aren't thinking about the previous playoff failures. You can't tell me that during the stretch where the Elks didn't win at home for basically, you know, Connor's entire life, that wasn't on a player's mind. Right? Shit like that goes in the back of your head no matter what. I'm not even an elite athlete. I'm a relatively above average semi-competitive curler. And shit like that always comes up. Right? It just ask anybody about the Johnny Flash story at the Saskatoon Country Music Association Bonspiel. I still remember that one to this day. So it's funny that I think a lot of this is just a mental block.
Yeah.
It seems to be a mental mistake here and there. And this is just a team that... And I know, like, our friend Dave Stadnick, another one of the seven, as we've now referenced two out of the seven, he says that we shouldn't hit the panic button because the Riders just suck. I would argue, Dave, as the kids these days would say, the Riders are just mid.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they don't seem particularly great at anything. They don't seem particularly bad at anything. And everything along, they are a 500 football team, right? Yeah. Even if you look points for, points against, they're basically middle of the pack with both of those. A little higher on the points for, but points against, again, they're not exceptional at defense. They're not exceptional at offense. Mario Alford, I don't know if he's battling something. He's no longer exceptional at special teams. They're just mid. So you're right. Like, I'm sure there are smarter football brains that, like, a Dan Plaster could maybe come on here and break down film, right? But for us, and, you know, looking at it as two ex-media guys, I see a team that gets a bad bounce or two and just is kind of okay. And I'll take that over the last few years where you could point and say they're bad. Now,
yeah, and I mean, I think you can tell they're still playing hard. You can tell there's still ability in there because this team is not folding like we've seen in the past.
No, which is,
like,
great.
Banjo Bowl and the games coming up. Some of the other games that, like, some of the stuff that's happened in the last number of weeks they've lost in those games, that, like, they would go on to lose by 3 or 4 scores.
The Toronto game comes to mind.
Yeah.
The Toronto game, I get it. You lost on something that even, like, one of my favorite accounts, John Boy, is making fun of. I love John Boy Media. They're making fun of, you know, kicking it through the end zone for the point. But, like, you reach the goal line. I don't see a Craig Dickinson-led team stopping Toronto once, never mind 3 times, right?
Maybe once, not 3 times.
I don't see a Craig Dickinson team battling back at Labor Day. I don't see a Craig Dickinson team not going into, for the Riders, probably the most hostile environment of the league, because because they've got, you know, the fan support at home. They've kind of got fan support everywhere they go. One of the few places you actually face a stadium full of opposition fans are Hamilton and Winnipeg, right? And they're in Winnipeg quite often. And Banjo Bowl, from everybody I've heard, and I've been there, it's loud. Like, it is playoff loud. So it's a tough place to play. And you go down 10-0 because of a couple oopsies, and you battle back and you make a game of it that has me only half-assed doing my MC duties. I apologize, Hutton Gary Society of Saskatoon. I'm sure nobody noticed, but only half-assed doing my MC duties because I'm trying to watch the game on a clipboard. So it's funny because you can't even, and that's the only problem, though, is you want to say, if this team had this, you know, if they had one more receiver.
I mean, I think one thing you could easily point to is if this team wasn't on their 12th offensive lineman.
Which is crazy, though, because the offensive line play has still been better.
It's been fine because Trevor Harris is throwing the ball at 1.2 seconds.
Right, and that's what you need.
It's limited them in their ability to go down the field a bit. There's no question about it. They're not as forward throwing as they were earlier in the year. I think that's obvious, and that's because for obvious reasons, especially this week without Peter Godber, who is the guy who stirs the entire drink of that offensive line, not in the lineup. No offense to Logan Ferland. Without him at center,
admirable job.
Yeah, they did the best they could under the circumstances. Quite frankly.
No, you're certainly right on that, right? I mean, but it's funny that the offensive line play hasn't been as bad as it's been in previous years when you had actually healthy bodies there. So that is encouraging. But you're right. It limits things because even looking at Trevor Harris's totals, he's only at 208 if you remove Cliche Schaefer Baker, making everybody miss on just a freakish athletic play that kind of felt a little vintage for him, right? So I'm glad that Trevor Harris is smart enough to get that ball out quick, knowing he has to. So
I'm pretty sure they've planned and they've schemed around it for sure. There's no question about it.
Oh, certainly. And I mean, it works. I mean, look at the dynasty days of the San Francisco 49ers. That was all the West Coast offense, which was all short dink and dunk kind of stuff. Or, you know, the Boise State Broncos in my NCAA 25 file. I have snuck in a reference to that video game every single week since it came out, by the way.
Yeah.
So I had to keep that streak going, just like Dan's Toyota.
And I think they had a pretty good plan in the game overall. Clearly, Corey Mace talked about it after the game, that their plan, they talked a lot about giving up big plays. So they, defense in the CFL cannot be defense in the NFL. The field is just too large to stop every single thing. You can't shut down a team to the point of nothingness unless they also suck horrifically.
Right.
You have to give up something. So they gave up the underneath and rallied to the ball to the point where, Zach Kolaris completed 30 passes to Brady Oliveira in the first half, leading Henock Mwamba to say that they need to do something about Brady Oliveira. And really, the Riders will let him check down all freaking day long if they want.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it was working. Because, the Bombers went up 10-0. You thought the route was on. The Riders responded. They got back into the game. And then for a good chunk of it, until sometime in the third quarter, the game was actually boring. That's what they needed at the Banjo Bowl.
They needed things to,
for once, just be calm, have literally nothing happen, and quiet down that building. And they did it, and that's what allowed them to stick around in this game.
Absolutely. I was getting texts from friends of mine in Winnipeg that were saying, wow, that are at the game. They're like, this is so boring. I'm not enjoying myself. Again, in this back-to-back series, you held Brady Oliveira to, no yards rushing, right? He had 11 carries for 43. Zach Kolaris with, I'll be the first to admit, he is playing better, probably because of a lawn sign on my lawn. But same thing, similar to Trevor Harris, only 231, only a 25-yard long, right? So they did their job. It's just, in the series, Mario Alford makes a mistake and gives them 7 points, mm-hmm. right?
Willa Jefferson gets a block. There's 3 points.
Right.
Picks, an unfortunate thing. Keyshawn Johnson falls and it leads to a pick. And then, Adam Korsak for the first time ever doesn't bury a punt in the corner.
Right?
And that was also we've talked about this in the press box many times. I don't think that's actually been looked up yet. But it feels like, and you may know, you probably don't, but you may know, it feels like Adam Korsak had never had a punt blocked until that game.
Off the top of my head.
Nothing stands out to any of the rest of us. Not that I'm good. I can't remember games from 3 weeks ago.
I'm
maybe not the best resource on this, but.
No, I mean, certainly not against Winnipeg.
No.
I can tell you that much. I don't think there's ever been one against Winnipeg since Korsak was there. And I don't remember us really and I might be entirely off base and one of our 7 listeners can correct us, but you're right. It's one of those things.
It's a freakish thing that suddenly decides to pop its head out. Cause the guy's usually pretty good at getting the ball out even with pressure in his face.
Yeah, exactly. And he's not like John Ryan that just boots it as hard as he could. And was the all time single season Rouge leader. I don't even know if that's true, but let's roll with it. Sounds accurate.
Yeah.
You're right. I can't think of many moments where Korsak has had those blocked, and his number of touchbacks is always quite low every single year, and his Rouge count is really low every single year. So it's just, but again, when you're a 500 team, when you are mid, as we have dubbed thee, you can't overcome those mistakes.
Yeah. And it's important to keep things in perspective. I think, like, okay, as we say again, I think the 5-1 start sort of muddied the water a bit.
Yep.
Like, this is not a rebuilding team, but it is a recharging team, a retooling team, whatever you want to call it, a team changing direction from what they were. And, like, whether what they were was good enough before or not doesn't really matter. The fact is, there's a new coach, there's a new culture, there's a new approach to everything. There was always going to be bumps along the way. This was not going to be a smooth transition from Craig Dickinson to Corey Mace to first place in the West. I don't think anyone expected that this year. So
we were given
maybe
that false sense of hope.
Yeah, so like third place in the West is probably still, has always been the realistic expectation. And they still hold that spot. They have some work to do, but it's not out of the question that they could finish there because they get Calgary twice, and they do have a game against Edmonton, which is proving that that is going to be an absolutely massive football game.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and two, you know, when Chris Jones first came in, we all said that first season is like a training camp.
Yeah, and like that team, that was a rebuilding team because that was a train wreck that was just the end of the Corey Chamberlain era is one of the messiest you'll see.
Oh, especially the CFL, right? Where
that was bad.
Yeah,
what got left behind here by Craig Dickinson, while there were issues, fundamentally had some pieces in place where they could still be an okay football team.
Right, and then the greatest seventh round pick in history, Joe, Jeremy O'Day showing some of his chops, but like, again, it's the CFL. It takes time, and I get it. Lots of guys change, but it takes time to figure out what you are. And even some of these mistakes we're talking about and have been talking about during the losing streak are on a rookie head coach and a rookie offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this isn't – like, I feel like the whole thing is just either mid or a learning curve for everybody. And
yeah.
I'm a guy that sat through a lot of really shitty football seasons being a Bombers fan.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, you come in and there's no hope.
Yep.
Right? Like, you've got Joey Elliott as your starting quarterback. Alex Brink is your starting quarterback, right? And you're just going, well, playoffs ain't happening this year. What's Kevin Glenn or Michael Bishop doing, right? At least this I would have taken mid for so many years.
Yep.
Because, let's face it, you start with mid and then you start building, as you have seen in the Winnipeg Blue Bombers the last few years. You know, Mike O'Shea, all the accolades for...
This was the point that I want to get to as well. And later that night when I had time, I went back and listened to the Green Zone postgame show just to kind of get a sense of what some people are talking about. And it was brought up, and like Jamie and the guys talked about it, and other people talked about it. No one remembers that Mike O'Shea won 4 games in his first year with Winnipeg.
Yeah, 100%.
And, you know,
even after that, I think the next year they were like...
Year 2 wasn't great. So. Year 3, they started 1-4 before they got Zach. And Matt Nichols was talking, and there was a lot of conversation about whether Mike O'Shea was going to get fired then.
I remember that. Yeah, it was
and
kind
now
of the win that...
they bring in Zach. They happen to get Zach Kolaris, and he's now the winningest coach in Bomber history.
Yeah.
And I don't think there are a few crazies out there suggesting coaching change already, but for the most part, I don't think anyone's actually looking or asking for this at that point, so it's not quite at that level yet. But the point is, this team is starting off from a better point than that Bomber team was. Give the coaching staff a chance to work itself through this. If fast forward a year from now after the Banjo Bowl, these same things are still happening, then we can start to have the conversation.
Oh, certainly. I would even like the only thing I will say to the coaching staff, if there's one last thing that they need to do, is win a game after Labor Day.
Yes.
I mean, I think that is coming when they play Calgary.
Yes, and like, I loathe the saying, oh, the bye week is coming at a good time. Because, I mean, other than maybe week one, there isn't really a bad time for a bye week.
No.
Especially when you get multiple in the CFL, so, okay. But, when you haven't won in 7 games, and this, you know, your fan base has experienced back-to-back years of 7-game losing streaks in the back half of the season, and, you know, some memories are starting to kick in. They're starting to feel like Seymour Skinner looking out the window. you know, a bye at this point is probably pretty good because I think, and it goes back to everything we've talked about, where they are a pretty good football team. They make some good plays. I think overall their schemes and everything is sound. They just need the mental break more than anything right now.
Certainly. And
get
they
away.
Need to come...
Take as much time as you can. Don't even think about the CFL. Go watch the NFL if that's what you do. Go watch college. Go do whatever. Go on vacation somewhere for a few days. Just don't even think about it.
The Spawn Moose Jaw is quite nice this time of year. Mike O'Shea's first year, 7-11. His second year, 5-13.
He went backwards even. Like
he did. Yeah. So they were mid, and then they were bad. And then since then, 11-12, 10-11, 11-15, 14-7 so far this year.
Yeah. And this year may be his best work considering what they've had to dig out of.
Well, yeah. I mean, you've also got a field goal kicker who can make from anywhere, so...
Well, yeah.
that does help, but you're right. His best work this year, veteran team, learning how to dig out of that. So the funniest thing is with all of this, and I think this just goes to show the temperature of Rider fans right now and how pissed off everybody is. I know people are calling for Corey Mace's head. Let's check eye on that. Let's relax here. He's not the problem. You have a 500 football team. It's just everybody relax. I'm still getting people that are like, that's it. Craig Reynolds has to go. This team is making money again. Like, that's his job.
That's not going to make a difference at this point. I mean, do that, then Jeremy and everyone's out the door already. And it's like, okay, what was the point of this whole season if everyone's just gone next year?
Right. And this was not a team. None of us ever came on here going, this is going to be a Grey Cup contender.
No.
And you've brought it up.
Maybe we thought about it earlier in the year, the way they were playing, but realistic to their expectations of the season, as we've talked about, they're kind of where they should be.
Exactly. It's everything finds its level point, and that's what this team has done so far.
The one thing that did happen in that game that is certainly worth discussing a little bit on length was yet again, defensive tackle Miles Brown in the middle of quote-unquote controversy for hitting a quarterback. You'll, of course, remember the play. Chris Trevler is looking like he's going to sneak the football on a 2nd and 2, I think it was, or whatever it was, something like that.
Yeah.
He's dropping back. All of a sudden, he pulls out and starts dropping back. Miles Brown fights through a hold to get there and makes contact on the lower half of Trevler. He goes down, immense pain, horrible situation. No one wants to see that happen. The flag comes out for roughing the passer. Then Corey Mace's flag comes out for a challenge, and I instantly thought he was challenging roughing the passer and said
he should have.
We'll get to that in a second. Instead, he was fishing for OPI to try and even up the penalties, which I understand the theory. He just chased the wrong challenge.
Oh, certainly.
But regardless, Winnipeg did end up taking a 15-yard flag as well, but it was after the play, so it was still first down. I think Corey was trying to keep it second down to stop the Bombers' momentum at that point. This all happened after that punt, by the way, too. This is the same drive.
Yes. The punt that changed the entire game.
And it did. It really did in a lot of ways. And I said it to Greg in our chat at the time. I was like, all because of this punt.
Like, you're bang on.
It was obvious.
But again, that's the thing a rookie coach is starting to learn.
And like the challenge, okay, your emotional moment, stuff happens, but... The discussion again is coming up about whether this hit was dirty. It's unfortunate. The outcome sucks. But Miles Brown made contact above the knee.
Yes.
In no world of any level of football, except obviously flag football, is that a penalty?
Or tights on spikes.
Yeah. Well,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, and here's the thing. Here's the biggest thing to me was reading the piece from John Hodge post-game on 3 Down Nation. Hodge did a really good job of giving all the quotes from the Bombers players, right? Mm-hmm. Like Kendall Randolph, the guy who was blocking him. He says, I hate that it happened. It was us. We got to be more physical. You know, then you went to the veterans, Patrick Neufeld, a guy who's on the offensive line, flat out says, I don't think he's a dirty player, right? Nick Dembski, I don't think Saskatchewan's a dirty team, right? You've got veteran guys, Kolaris made the same kind of comments. You've got guys, leaders in the Winnipeg dressing room, basically saying, hey, he plays hard. We didn't do our job. Shit happens, right? Because you know, especially after what happened to Zach last week, these guys would have been outspoken and Wade Miller would have been running his mouth again and everybody would have been running their mouths and calling Miles Brown a dirty player. And kudos to the Bombers for not buying into that bullshit and not buying into that narrative. Miles Brown is good at what he does, and his job is to get close to the quarterback. when he's getting close to that quarterback, offensive linemen need to do whatever they can to keep him from hitting the quarterback. And in doing so, his momentum is carrying him into quarterbacks, right? The only one of the hits I would call borderline, quote unquote, dirty, I'm not suggesting that Miles Brown is a dirty player, was maybe the Kolaris hit. He hit him in the head. That's
It wasn't intentional on that one, but it was
no.
It was a dirty play in the sense that it happened. He made contact with the head, so
and
it
he's
was flagged
the wall because of it.
Yeah, it was flagged, and he was fined as he should have been. This play, it's very clear on the replay that he made contact above the knee. Does it slide down? He eventually hits the knee. Sure, but
yes,
that happens.
Original contact was the quad. It's a physical game, like you said last week. It's a physical game. You could wrap these guys in bubble wrap, and things like that are still going to happen.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, now, and there's all the other circumstances. Like, I don't know. I don't really think the offensive line really threw into it. But when you're in the entire defensive front is expecting a sneak, and all of a sudden that isn't, you're like, when you're thinking sneak, you are going downward.
Yes.
So 100%. The play call is suddenly, anytime you do that, anytime you fake a sneak, you are risking something like that happening because you have a bunch of defensive linemen going downward.
Well, and to do that and only take a three-step drop, too, Strebler should have at least taken a 5 or 7, which would give the play more time to develop and got himself
and then
like
Brown
dinged.
Probably just ends up on his belly.
100%, right? But that was the way the play was drawn up. But I'm annoyed, and again, to bring up Greg from Piffles, I know Greg has been fighting with Bomber fans online all week. I throw a sign in my yard, text me, shit talk me that way. I'm not into fighting people online.
I don't expect anything less from fans. And if it was the other way around, I would expect Ryder fans to act generally the same way as well, because fans will be fans and that's fine.
Oh, certainly. And that if Willie Jefferson had fallen to 3 quarterbacks this year, you'd be saying the same thing, right? And I'd be the one sitting here defending him on a podcast, because thankfully I have that platform and I don't have to argue with strangers online. But again, I don't think Brown is a dirty player. And we spoke to people who know people in the Riders organization that said that he actually felt bad about the hit to Zach. And so to me,
he felt bad. And the accusations essentially from Wade Miller were weighing on him.
100%. So that to me says you don't have a guy like Garrett Marino that basically was like a comic book villain, right? Like if you were to take crazy football player and make him in a comic book, that you would have Garrett Marino, right? Miles Brown has just had, he's like Spider-Man in, oh God, why can't I remember the name of the movies, when Mysterio dies in the second of the Tom Holland movies and he's just kind of there. Sorry, my kids have been on the Spider-Man kick. I know you don't get that reference, Gas, just roll with
no,
it, right?
I don't, no.
He's just kind of there, right? And it looks like he's the villain, but I don't think he is. Now, if he goes out and, like, gives somebody an RKO out of nowhere, maybe we can have a different conversation. But to me, he's a guy that's good at his job, that gets to the quarterback, he plays hard, and that's what the Bombers veterans are saying. And you know when the vets of the other team are saying it?
Well, especially, to me, the one that really thinks that when Zach Kolaris is out there saying it, when he, like, Zach Kolaris was one of the guys last year talking shit about the Pete Robertson headbutt, which was fine.
Right.
So the fact that we know that Zach Kolaris will be outspoken when he thinks it is warranted and was not in this situation, right. I think that says everything, doesn't it?
And two guys on the offensive line.
Yeah.
They both said, dude plays hard. I don't think he's a dirty player, right? So I hope he can find some peace, but oh my God. And I watched this again. I didn't watch the game live. And this made it more apparent, and I know you and I discussed this briefly before I watched the game on PVR. So, got home that night, I started to watch the game on PVR before I went to bed, and I feel bad judging because I do the same job, and I know how hard this job can be, but watching and fast forward and hearing Glenn Suter constantly go back to that without context was just, oh boy. I'll let you take it away, because I still have a contract to sign, maybe with TSN. We don't know what the broadcast deal is going to be. As soon as I find out what the broadcast deal is, then I can definitely give my real thoughts. But I'll let you take it from here on this one, Gas.
Yeah, I mean, Glenn Suter, as soon as the play happened on the replay, there was talk. Instantly, he started going after Brown for the hit.
Dusty Nielsen stuck up for Brown. I love Dusty. We are big Dusty guys. That made me even bigger of a Dusty guy.
And he essentially calling Brown dirty, the play dirty, the whole situation was this horrific, Like, he sounded like Wade Miller on the broadcast, essentially.
100% he did.
And that's just not right. Like, your job, like, you can think this in your head if you want. I mean, that's fine. Personally, if he thinks Miles Brown is a dirty player, okay. That's his opinion. But
right.
Your job as the analyst at the end of the day is to just describe what is happening in front of you and why it is happening. It is not to pass judgment necessarily on everything. And it is especially when you are passing incorrect judgment, because to most people, and I saw, okay, we go back a week ago from the Miles Brown hit on Zach Collaros to the head, there was basically nobody but Rider fans defending him.
Right.
You go fast forward this one to the one on Chris Trevler, I saw lots of discussion from fans who were neither Bomber nor Rider fans saying about that hit from Miles Brown that was not roughing the passer.
No.
So it's obviously a little bit maybe more in a gray zone, but it was not clear and cut, and as Glenn Suter made it out to be, it's completely unfair that how he cast Miles Brown in that situation. And I mean, and we've talked about at length, it's the number of things Glenn Suter has fucked up this year. And yes. He continued, and some of the other things he's talking about in this game, it's just like, what are we doing here?
Well, I don't get, from a technical standpoint, so I'm going to let y'all behind the curtain. With color commentary, with broadcasting, you're trained to act like the viewer is just joining you, right? So you want to give score, you want to break down something that they've just seen on their TV. The thing from a technical standpoint, and I agree with everything you said, but from a technical standpoint, for Suter to just keep bringing it up, in a close football game, I get it. I've been there in blowouts. You go off the rails.
Yeah.
When you're in a blowout, either way, you're trying.
This was a close game, and there was plenty to talk about otherwise.
Exactly. And
like, and the play ultimately, okay, we can talk about whether momentum changed or not because of the delay and the nonstop and all that. But realistically, the penalty didn't really have an effect on the game one way or the other.
No, sir.
Other than Strebler, of course, going out and changing some, you know, game planning for the Bombers, but. The actual outcome was not decided in any shape or form by this penalty.
But even their short yardage team with their third string quarterback looked just fine, right? Like, it wasn't like you went out like, this is a team. Mike O'Shea is like Dan Campbell. It doesn't matter if Zach Collaros is back there, if he's got to put a running back in there. If it's third and two and plus territory, he's going.
Yeah.
Right? That's why they wanted to get Chris Trevler back, because even if you look at previous years, he had Dakota Prukop in that spot where it's third and two in plus territory, maybe a little out of Sergio range, they're going. Right? Like, that's just what this team does. So they didn't change the game. And it's just, I just couldn't believe how much Suter kept bringing up. And here's a pro tip for you. If you're ever watching a broadcast and you think the color commentator has said something stupid, watch how the play-by-play guy reacts. If they just move on, if there is zero acknowledgement, nothing. If the color commentator brings up something other than, you know, the relevant information for the last play, if you bring up something stupid, your play-by-play guy doesn't bring it up.
Yeah.
Trust me, Cody Jansen has left me on red a lot of times on air.
I don't blame him. Yeah, I don't blame him at all. So, I mean, yeah, like, fans can think what they want. Even some of the players can think what they want. But you can't get it that wrong on a broadcast. I'm sorry. Like, even if you thought the flag was warranted, tone it down a bit and say, you know what, it's close, but I agree with the officials and the flag was warranted. Okay,
don't bring it up. Don't keep bringing it up. In Fast Forward, it was jarring how many times it kept coming. It's like that guy that's like, I'm totally over my ex-girlfriend. Oh, my God. She used to twirl her hair just like that. Oh, my God. She used to drink her beer just like that. Bro, get over it. Like, Chikai.
Americans are durable. We take pride in hard work and high quality. American Giant makes durable quality clothing right here in the USA. Because what we wear reflects who we are. When you buy American Giant, you're not just wearing the best clothes money can buy. You're helping keep jobs and pride in your own backyard. Premium clothing built to last decades, like it should. Get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code RIGHTHERE24.